Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
FM News Talk 97.1.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is anchor man, not anchor lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Yes, it is, but yours truly, Tim Jones, is in for Annie today. I'll be back on Friday hosting the Annie Fry Show while she and Katie Fitzpatrick wrap up their tour de force of Manhattan. Tomorrow, Annie will be back here on air running her show from the Big Tower up in New York City. She'll be on the Big Fox Radio, in the Big Fox Radio studios there, broadcasting back here to St. Louis. She's going to tell you all about all of their adventures. It'll be a fantastic show. You're going to want to check it out and listen to the entire 3 hours tomorrow from noon to three, because I'm sure they have many adventures and stories to tell you. And they'll tell you all about the award show tonight as well. Annie's receiving a Gracie Award. It's a national award for women in broadcasting. We're all very excited. Huge congrats to Annie, to Katie, to Frank, Chad, who's here a lot for Annie, Tony, the entire crew. It's really remarkable and such an honor for Annie to get recognized out of, I'm sure, many well-deserving candidates all across the country. Well, welcome to the third hour of the Annie Fry Show. And I've been talking quite a bit today about public sector labor unions, about the fact that our own Missouri State Senator Bob Onder just testified up on Capitol Hill regarding this very issue in front of an antagonistic, not-so-friendly House committee. And now to join us, 1 year on the eve of the one-year anniversary of the famous, very famous Mark Janus, the Janus decision, joining us now is none other than Miley Smith. She is a labor expert over at the Illinois Policy Institute, staff attorney there. They're at illinoispolicy.org. Miley, thanks for joining us on the Annie Fry Show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, Miley, I was telling the folks earlier, I've had the distinct honor and privilege of meeting Mark Janus several times. He's been over here to Missouri. I've met him outside of the state at some conferences he has spoken at regarding workers' rights and worker freedom. And just to remind folks, Miley, Mark Janus is just a salt of the earth, honest to goodness, great American,
yes,
who decided that,
yes,
he'd had enough of government coercion.
That's right. He was a state worker himself. And he was a part of a union until he got a paycheck and saw that there were union dues cutting out. He wasn't even given the option to not be a member. And so he had, the courageous attitude to go ahead and partner with Liberty Justice Center, who is our litigation partner, and challenge the Supreme Court precedent that allowed unions to force workers to pay the union just to keep their jobs.
Yeah, so Miley, let's dig a little bit deeper into that. Every state has its own different laws regarding public sector labor unions, although there is a lot of commonality between a lot of the states. So
right,
what was the,
yeah,
specific law on the books that Mark Janus was challenging for all workers in the state of Illinois?
You're exactly right. So the states govern how public sector or government unions work. And there was a Supreme Court decision called Abood, that in which the Supreme Court had said that public sector employers could force public sector workers, government workers, to pay the union if the union represents them. So in states like Illinois, we had a law that said that employers and the union could agree to charge a fair share fee for people who were not members of the union. So you could choose not to be a member of the union prior to the Janus case, but you still had to pay the union fees for allegedly their help in representing. And what the Janus
What a great racket that must have been for public sector unions. And Miley, there was nobody representing the taxpayers during any of these negotiations, was there ever?
Well, initially, Governor Rauner was a part of the case, but he was dismissed from the case early on as not really having taxpayers and don't have standing in these types of cases. And the governor was seen as not having standing because he wasn't a worker, he wasn't a union, and he was dismissed from the case.
So, Miley, what was, just remind everybody, what was the holding, what was the decision of the Supreme Court of the United States on Mark Janus's case, and how did that affect workers' rights across the entire country?
So the Supreme Court overruled its a decision in Abood and said it is unconstitutional to force workers to pay the union to keep their jobs. Now, they can pay the union to be a member, but there has to be clear and affirmative consent that they want to be a member and that they have waived their First Amendment rights. And that's what the case was about. It was about First Amendment rights, your right to decide who you associate with and your right to decide who your hard-earned money goes to.
Because, Miley, the biggest consternation I think a lot of workers have is that the public sector labor unions, especially over the last decade or so, were having a really tough time proving to workers that they were getting bang for their buck, that they were getting a benefit from all these union dues that were being automatically deducted from their paychecks. And even worse so, you know, it was just assumed that every public sector worker would agree with all the political funding that the unions gave to causes that workers may not agree with. Basically, the workers had no say,
right.
and to make it worse, the public sector labor unions were mainly spending all of their money on one sort of political ideology. It was the left, and a lot of workers were like, "Well, dues are being taken out of my paycheck, and I have no say over where they're being spent."
Right, exactly, and one of the overwhelming reasons that we have in Illinois why they're leaving their unions is because their unions are not representing them well. Either they don't like the way the union spends the money, or the union only cares about leadership. Union transparency is a huge issue with workers, how the union is spending their money. And, you know, there are fantastic examples in the union's own federal reporting that shows that the unions are not putting workers first. Not only are they spending money on a political ideology, but they are not putting money into representing their workers. AFSCME Council 31 here in Illinois, in their latest filing from 2000, it was filed earlier this year, but it showed that only 17%, so 17 cents of every dollar that AFSCME spent was on representing workers. The Illinois Education Association, which is Illinois' largest teacher union, only 13 cents of every dollar it spent in the last 6 years was on representing workers. So if you can imagine, like any other type of third-party organization or nonprofit that you're giving money to, and it only spends 13 to 17 cents on the dollar on its programming, people would be outraged by that.
So that's
what's happening to union members.
Yeah, Miley, so over 80% of the union dues are going to purposes that have nothing to do with representing the workers themselves. That's amazing.
Right. It's overhead, administration, benefits for the union leadership and their employees, politics, contributions, and, you know, other leadership priorities. But the vast majority of their spending is not on representing workers.
Miley, earlier in the program, folks, were speaking to Miley Smith, who is a labor expert and a staff attorney over at the Illinois Policy Institute. On Twitter, you can follow everything the Illinois Policy Institute does on all kinds of public policy debates at Illinois Policy on Twitter. Miley, we had a state senator from Missouri over here, a very good friend of mine, Senator Bob Onder, who's been leading the charge over here in Missouri for various labor reforms. He was testifying up on Capitol Hill in D.C. today about a bill that Speaker Pelosi is moving through the House that would basically federally preempt all of these laws that the states have and all these reforms the states have been putting into place on collective bargaining. Are you familiar with that piece of legislation at all? Have you heard anything about it?
I am, and yeah, and I'm familiar with Senator Otter too. He's a great guy, and I'm excited to hear that he was testifying today.
He was. That's a very dangerous proposition, isn't it? That the federal government is trying to now take over yet another area that the states have heretofore held.
Yeah, I would liken it to a lot of smoke and mirrors, because there is a separation of powers in the United States, and there are things that are set aside for the states to do. And this is one area where this is within the state's realm to regulate. You know, I don't agree with the way Illinois regulates it, but it is within the state's right to regulate it in the way it chooses. So if the federal government is stepping in, we're going to see, you know, that separation of powers issues, the overstepping of territory. Bills like this have been introduced in the past. A lot of it is so that they can have a press conference and talk about it. But I wouldn't expect the bill to get terribly far.
Yeah, let's hope so. Thank goodness for the Mitch McConnell-led Senate. You know, Miley, let's talk about the aftermath of Janus. It's been 1 year, and I would love to have you tell me that everyone has just freely complied with the Janus decision, and that public sector workers across the nation in California and New York and Illinois are just happy days are here again, and their freedoms and liberties have been restored. But I have a feeling you're going to tell me that the unions are doing everything possible to avoid complying with Janus.
Well, and that's the case. And there's litigation all over the country. I have had workers come to me and tell me some of the things that unions in Illinois are saying that are inherently not true, like, you know, just things like you can't opt out of your union. We have a Supreme Court decision on our side. But we are seeing that the Janus decision and Mark's Janus' story is resonating with workers. And workers are choosing to exercise their rights and not join or pay the union. We're still gathering numbers. It's still fairly early. It's been a year, but not all unions have reported their post-Janus numbers yet. Mm-hmm. But early indications are that for Illinois, membership is down 3 percentage points, and non-membership has nearly doubled in the last year. So we are seeing workers who are exercising their rights. We can look at AFSCME Council 31, which I referenced earlier. We know that more than 8,000 workers in Illinois have already stopped paying the union. Some of those were fair share payers before, but some of those were members who have now decided to take the affirmative step and opt out of their union. So that's actually 12% of the overall numbers that the union represents in Illinois. So we are seeing that workers are taking notice of this case, that they are exercising their rights. And we know that word is still not out to a number, you know, a lot of people. There was a survey earlier this week put out by the Association of American Educators. Still don't know that they don't know about the Janus case or know that they have the right to opt out. So as word gets out and education spreads about rights and the ability to opt out, we expect more workers to exercise those rights.
And Miley, I think that one of the most important points to stress about this decision, the Janus decision, is that it's not anti-union, it's pro-worker, isn't it? Because the Janus decision is going to force unions to provide a true benefit if they want workers to join, right? And if they continue to not provide that benefit, if they continue to spend all their money not on representing workers but on political causes, which maybe the workers don't agree with, or on other things that they feel they're wasting their money on, well, then the workers should have the right to speak with their pocketbook, right? And if the unions want to do better, well, then maybe they should listen to their workers a little bit more.
That's exactly right. Workers, these workers are, and if as a consumer, you know, choose where our money goes. And if we aren't pleased with a membership organization, we don't have to have our money go there. But it needs to step it up and figure out, hey, why are people leaving? So this is pro-worker. It's pro-workers' rights. They have the option. They have a choice for the first time in 40 years whether or not to pay the union. And in the end, what this should do is encourage the unions to perform better on behalf of their members, you know, to not just spend 17 cents on the dollar on representing workers, but put that money, that dues money that they get from their members, for their members.
Miley, if we have a lot of, I know we have a lot of public sector employees that listen to the show. We appreciate their listenership very much, and they're very interested in this topic. If they want to find out more information or what, or to find out more about what their rights are, where would you, what resources would you direct them to?
I would direct them to, if they're in Illinois, I would direct them to www.leavemyunion.org. And if they're in Missouri or elsewhere, go to a website called standwithworkers.org.
Standwithworkers.org or leaveyourunion.org. Hey, Miley.
Leave my union.
Leave my union. Leave my union. And of course, you can always get great information at IllinoisPolicy.org as well. Miley Smith, thanks for joining us today, bringing us all this news, this update about the Janus decision 1 year in. We'll continue to have you back on to keep giving us updates as we move forward for more worker freedom.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miley. Have a great day. And this is the Annie Fry Show. Tim Jones in for Annie Fry. Got lots more show straight ahead. We're going to talk. We'll get back to talking about the Democratic debate. Who is on the stage tonight? Who tomorrow? And what to look for? Tony and I will continue to break that down for you here on the Annie Fry Show at FM News Talk 97.1.
You're listening to the Annie Fry Show.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For a moment, imagine a new reality in the Middle East. Imagine a bustling commercial and tourist center in Gaza and the West Bank where international businesses come together and thrive. Imagine the West Bank as a blossoming economy full of entrepreneurs, engineers, scientists, and business leaders. This isn't a stretch. This is actually the historical legacy of the Middle East.
That was Jared Kushner, and he's exactly right. And because of Iran, who funds Hamas and Hezbollah, because Iran is one of the biggest players in that part of the world and is the world's largest state sponsor of terror, that's why we can't realize Jared Kushner's vision until that issue is dealt with. It's why we can't have nice things over there. To say it's Donald Trump's fault, it's beyond ignorance. This is an issue that's been going on for thousands of years, and it has seen flashpoints. And it's enduring another flashpoint right now. But, you know, the left-wing liberal lunatics who run the national liberal media, they just want to blame everything on Donald Trump. If Donald Trump goes to war with Iran, he's a warmonger. If he doesn't go to war with Iran, then he's weak, or he's confused, or he's unhinged, or he's whatever pejorative they want to throw at him. I think it's hilarious. It's the height of hypocrisy. Not even hilarious. It's the height of hypocrisy that the liberal media wants to say that Donald Trump is the mean guy. Donald Trump is the one that hurls epithets. Donald Trump is the one that acts unpresidential. Donald Trump's a counterpuncher. If you watch him carefully, he rarely starts a fight. He rarely picks a battle. But boy, if you come after him, he's coming right back at you. And the reason they're not used to that is he's the first Republican that I remember who's willing to do that, to take that stance against people. And that's why he's so refreshing. And that's why so many Americans who have never voted before. I ran into so many people across the country here in Missouri and beyond back in the 2016 campaign who said, I've never voted for anybody before, but Donald Trump has inspired me to go register and go vote. I don't know if I'm a Republican. I don't know if I'm a Democrat, but he's speaking to me as an American. I mean, Tony, that's pretty much what the people said to me.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. There was a big push. People have already sort of forgotten that there was a fad in 2016 to vote for the outsider, and some people, I mean, simply because they were the outsider. Mm-hmm. There was this backlash against the establishment in both parties, Republican and Democrat, people that had been in office for years and decades. You know, that suddenly was a very negative thing, despite their record.
Mm-hmm.
There was this push to bring in, quote-unquote, regular people, non-politicians, and put them in these elected offices. I think Eric Greitens took
full advantage
of that fad, and it all started with Donald Trump.
You're right. Before Donald Trump, there was a malaise starting to affect the voter electorate where they were just tired of Clinton Bush, or
same old names.
Now it's John McCain's turn. Now it's Mitt Romney's turn. Now it's Hillary Clinton's turn.
Yeah.
This all started before Donald Trump. That's why he ran. He saw this coming. He saw this coming down the rails, and he's like, time for me to run.
Yep. But it took somebody like Donald Trump. It was very interesting. Bill O'Reilly was on with Dave Glover a couple days ago.
Yes, great interview.
And he said that there were only two people in the country that could have done what Donald Trump did, in that they were not a politician. They were just a popular celebrity that would have the money and the influence and the personality, the ability to run and win the presidency. Did you hear what he said?
Yes, I did.
Donald Trump and Oprah Winfrey.
Amazing.
He said the only two people in his opinion in the country that could have done what Donald Trump did. Oprah and Trump.
Because they start with all that name ID. Let's wrap up. A lot of people calling in about our public sector labor union debate. Let's speak next to David. David, good afternoon. You're on the air on the Annie Fry Show.
Good afternoon. How are we doing today?
Great. Go right ahead.
Well, I listen to this show from about 5 a.m. until about 8 o'clock at night when I go to bed. And 99% of the stuff that you talk about, I like and I accept. But I'm trying to figure out why you think it's okay for a guy to join a hall or join a job, get hired at a job at a hall, and decide to opt out of the hall. Why don't you go get hired someplace else that ain't in a hall? And if he does opt out of the hall, does he get all the benefits, all the stuff that the people in the hall will still get, or does he start out at 15 an hour instead of, 25 an hour?
Yeah, well, a couple of different things there, David. First of all, today we haven't been talking about necessarily the trades and the halls. We've been talking about the public sector employees. And it doesn't really matter how I feel about that anymore, because the Supreme Court has decided that public sector union employees, government employees, do not have to pay dues to their unions if they don't want to. That's just the law of the land.
But they're still in the union.
No, they don't. They're in the union, but they don't have to be forced to pay the dues. I'll tell you why, David, because the unions don't, especially the public sector unions, they don't spend that money anymore on the workers. They spend it on left-wing liberal political causes, and that's the union's fault.
Well, I understand that point of it, but being in the hall also raises your pay up.
Yeah, well,
again, you're able to afford to make the payment on the dues.
Yeah.
And I'm old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan fired all that, and that's what started all of it.
Yep.
When he fired the control workers, that gave everybody an idea that you don't have to be in a hall no more, that if you start enough of this stuff, that you'll get fired. And if I remember right, there are some incidents that happened in the air after he fired the people that hurt people, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so again, David, we're mixing apples and oranges here. We're talking today about public sector, taxpayer-funded union employees, not the trades. So the public sector unions don't have a hall. They just have the government. And the argument is you shouldn't have to, who's representing the taxpayer, I guess, David, is the question during these public sector employee debates. So,
who's representing the taxpayer? There ain't nobody representing the taxpayer.
Well, you're exactly right. Hey, David, I got to run. You're very good call, my friend. Yeah, he's kind of mixing apples and oranges a little bit with what we were talking about. But we got another caller, Len's on the line. We'll get to him when we come back. He is against public sector unions, so we'll get the other side of the coin when we come back. Appreciate everybody's positions on it. It is a complicated situation. We got one more segment left. Love to hear from you. 314-241-9797, 314-241-9797. Tim Jones in for Annie Fry. It's the Annie Fry Show at FM News Talk 97.1.
You're listening to the Annie Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Northern Triangle countries, we can't do that. We have to keep you. That's that catch and release. And that's why they're coming, because they know you grab a kid or you come here as a kid by yourself, that's your passport. That's your entry into the United States. And once you get here, no consequences are applied, even if you have a final order by a judge. This has got to change.
Yeah, it's Mark Morgan, who was on the Mark Cox Show the other day talking about this legal immigration issue. And, you know, it's such a serious thing because basically we're taking all of our laws in this sphere of jurisprudence and we're throwing them out the window. We're saying that borders don't matter, systems don't matter, procedures don't matter. The rule of law is being thrown out the window. That's the only thing that keeps us folks from being just having kangaroo courts, from being a third world banana republic. I mean, it's our rule of law, is our system of justice. And, you know, believe it or not, Tony, to give us a little advance preview of maybe some of the insanity tonight, I just came across an article about Elizabeth Warren, where apparently she's decided to throw down the gauntlet and just go for the jugular and call for the decriminalization of illegal immigration at borders. Just finally saying what we've been accusing them on the left of doing this for months. We were crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth Warren, according to the Huffington Post, she joined 2020 Democratic presidential rival Julian Castro. I guess no one knew about it because Castro said it, but now that Warren, who's more of a frontrunner, said it, everybody's picked up on it. Illegal border crossing should be decriminalized.
Julian Castro will be there tonight with her, so he'll probably be saying, "It was my idea first. I said it first." But this goes back to the point that you made at the very beginning of the show, and we talked a little bit about yesterday. At least you, with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and a couple others, but not many, you can say that they're at least consistent. This is on brand, on message for Elizabeth Warren to think this way and believe this. If Joe Biden were to say that, which I wouldn't put past him.
Eventually, maybe he will.
I wouldn't put it past him. But Joe Biden has decades and decades of quotes that you can go back and pull of him talking about how important it is to have border security. He can't. He says it and he's obviously flip-flopping. Elizabeth Warren says it and she's pretty much.
It's an evolution of her philosophy.
It's pretty much on.
Philosophy.
Yeah, it's pretty much on. I mean, I'm sure you can find even times in her past where she has talked about border security, but it's not surprising. It's more on brand for her to say that than it would be some of these other Democrats. And you know what? And right now, crazily, it's benefiting her.
It really is. We got one more comment about our discussion about public sector unions. Len, good afternoon. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show.
Hey, Tim. Yeah, nice to hear you guys discuss some of this stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm talking as a retired private sector trade union member.
Sure.
And I don't, in my view, the public sector should not be allowed to organize. I don't think I'm far out on that. George Meany, founder of the AFL-CIO, was against public sector unions.
Yep, so was FDR. So was President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was adamantly opposed to public sector unions.
That's correct. And I think recently here in Wisconsin, public sector workers doing the same jobs were on average, you know, earning about 20% more than private sector jobs. And now, I know there are hardworking public sector people. I don't deny that.
Sure.
However, in my trade, I can almost, you know, vouch that it would be significantly better conditions. You know, not as hard, not as much pressure in the public sector. And my point is this. You know, in the private sector, if our wages get too high, we won't have work because our competition is the non-union worker.
That's correct.
There are non-union.
You're competing. Yeah, you're competing every day against similarly situated businesses.
Right. In our labor, you know, leaders, you know, knew that if our wages outpace them too much, it's what's going to cost us work, and so that would kind of balance one another. In the public sector, who's the competition?
Right. Yeah. Who competes with the government?
So, and that's one of the big reasons why I don't think the public sector should be allowed to organize. And in response to the last caller about PATCO, the air traffic controllers, I think they violated their contract. I believe
they did.
There was a no strike clause.
Correct.
They struck, and President Reagan fired them. He was right to do so.
Absolutely, because you can't be putting the public's health and safety at risk, and that's the other problem. You know what you get when you're signing up for one of these jobs, and you can't then put your own self in front of the public that you're taking an oath to serve and protect.
Right, and many labor people, you know, and workers feel like whatever the union, you know, does is, you know, they're going to back them. Mm-hmm. I tell them this. I don't back my children and support them when they're wrong. I love them, but I'm not going to support them when they're wrong, and I'm not going to support labor when I think they're wrong.
Len, you sound like a free thinker.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you what. At least in my labor union, if you weren't a member of a certain, I mean, if you weren't a member of a certain party, you weren't going to be a union leader.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
uh-huh.
You just wouldn't be. It's just that's just reality.
Unfortunately, Len, that's the God's honest truth, and that's why I think the labor unions have gotten themselves in trouble, because they've tilted too far to favoring one side.
That's correct. Anyway, thanks for the discussion.
Len. Yeah,
just wanted to be my point.
Yeah,
okay.
Thanks for calling the show. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a great discussion with a union fella. I'm going to thank Len for calling in. We thank all of our listeners of all political stripes, no matter who you work for, no matter what you do. Thanks for listening to the Annie Fry Show. We really appreciate it. Before we wrap up here, I keep promising you this. I'm going to get to it before the end of the show. Tonight, on deck, the first Democratic national debate. Elizabeth Warren, Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar. Okay? So you've all heard of them, most likely. Most people have probably heard of those four. Also, maybe some lesser knowns. Washington State's governor, Jay Inslee, former Housing Urban Development Secretary, the aforementioned Julian Castro, Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard, who I actually like on some issues, mm-hmm. which is interesting. New York City's mayor, comrade Bill de Blasio, hasn't seen a tax he doesn't like.
Bill de Blasio.
Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan, who challenged Nancy Pelosi 2 years ago for speaker.
Did you know that it was like 2 days ago that I realized that Tim Ryan wasn't Tim Kaine, who was the vice president running mate of Hillary Clinton?
It's hard to keep these people straight, Tony. I don't blame you.
When I saw the name written, Tim Ryan, I, for whatever reason, in my head, pictured Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine.
And realized a couple days ago, I wronged Tim, and it's not him. It's a different guy.
And former Maryland Congressman John Delaney, who I hardly know from his name.
I can't believe he made the cut. He was one of them that was famously booed by Democrats in California when he was giving a speech and said that we shouldn't give away free.
Everything shouldn't be free.
That free education
bad.
Is too expensive.
Yeah.
That we need to fix the system, but just giving it away is not right.
Medicare for all is probably not a great idea.
Yeah, he got booed off the stage, basically.
So, Tony, out of those 10... with the top, they claim here the top four front runners for tonight, just for tonight, would be Warren, O'Rourke, Booker, Klobuchar.
Yeah,
then you've got
Inslee,
Castro, Gabbard, de Blasio.
Bill de Blasio.
Bill de Blasio. It's hard not to do that. Ryan, Tim Ryan, and Delaney. Any dark horses in there you think could maybe pop a little bit tonight if they say the right thing according to the Democrats?
No, I don't think Delaney or Castro or Tulsi Gabbard or Inslee, any of those people, I think they're already gone. I don't think they can do anything tonight that's going to make them stand out.
It's the weird, person, isn't it? Because it's funny because these people are all very, even though they're all Democrats and I agree with them on probably nothing philosophically or pragmatically or legally, you can't take away that these folks have accomplished big things in their lives, in their worlds, and they're accomplished politicians. But Tony, it's kind of like sports analogy, right? And for me, golf, right? These are all awesome golfers that play golf, right? But there's a huge difference between the web.com tour and the PGA Tour.
Yes.
And they could all beat me on any day with one hand tied behind their back.
Sure.
And they're all below scratch golfers, and they're all awesome. There's the it factor, right?
Yeah.
There's the it factor between a Tiger Woods and someone struggling on the web.com tour,
sure.
And they both may be awesome golfers, but it's the same
thing.
But
I don't think these are all awesome politicians.
No, same thing with politicians. They've achieved a certain thing,
yeah,
but they'll
achievement
never...
Achievement level, maybe,
they'll
yes.
They'll never get to prime time,
yeah,
except for maybe Warren.
Yeah. 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 And the person that I'm going to watch the closest tonight that I expect to do something to kind of go for it is Cory Booker, because
yeah.
he's got enough name recognition and enough media attention that what he says still matters. What he says and does still matters to a certain extent and will get coverage, but he has so dramatically underperformed in the polls since this campaign, since this whole thing got started, that he's desperate to make a move and to become relevant. So I think Elizabeth Warren is going to play it safe and that doesn't mean she's not going to say some crazy stuff, but she's just going to stick to her guns. She's just going to be Elizabeth Warren. She's not going to throw bombs. I mean, some things, her just policy is bomb throwing sometimes, but she's not going to, you're not going to see her desperately trying to fight for air or attack somebody. I don't think. But I think Cory Booker is. I think Cory Booker is
He's such a goofball, though.
But I think we're going to see him. I think we're going to see him yell. I think we're going to see him. That's his new thing. He screams everything he says. I think he's going to get. I think we're going to see emotion, fabricated emotion,
right?
Fake emotion, and a loud volume of his voice. I think he's going to be the one that is desperately trying to gain attention and. Make tonight the turnaround for his campaign.
He needs to drop the mic at the one point and do this.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I mean, come on, man. Right? He should ask to be introduced as Spartacus.
Thursday
yeah,
night.
He's the one that's going to go for it tonight, I think.
Thursday night. Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders. Kamala Harris. Pete Buttigieg, Kristen Gillibrand, Michael Bennett, who's a Colorado senator, former Colorado governor, another guy who got booed off the Socialists of America stage, otherwise known as the DNC convention, John Hickenlooper.
Yeah. Took my mom to see Deep Throat, John Hickenlooper.
Maybe the most hated man in America, the most despicable man in America, Eric Swalwell.
Yep.
Congressman from California. Just god-awful.
Yep.
Entrepreneur Andrew Yang. And author Marianne Williamson. She's like your favorite, right?
She's a new age author.
How can you not? How does she? Okay, Tony. How the hell? Oh, my head's going to explode.
Hold on.
How is Marianne Williamson on the stage with Joe Biden?
She qualified for this debate before Kristen Gillibrand did.
That's awesome.
So you had to, I think you had to have one of two qualifications. You had to have either 65,000 separate individual donations to your campaign, or you had to hold a 1% average in some combination of polls. I can't remember the exact thing, but it was 1% in the polls or 65,000 individual donations.
She and
Marianne Williamson crossed that threshold before Kristen Gillibrand did.
She and Randy Quaid need to get together and do a duo.
But I don't know if that says something good about Marianne Williamson or something terrible about Kristen Gillibrand.
I mean, that's going to be a free for all tomorrow, right?
Yeah. John Hickenlooper, if this was 15 years ago,
he'd be the front runner.
He would be, if he wasn't the front runner, he would be the most capable Democrat.
He's the non-gaff version of Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's too reasonable.
Too normal.
Yeah.
You know what? A lot of people.
He's not a socialist.
I'll tell you a little secret. A lot of people on my side of the aisle like Hickenlooper because he's actually really good on taxes. He was a disciple of the great Art Laffer, the Laffer curve. Laffer, Dr. Laffer likes Hickenlooper.
He's the kind of Democrat that could have, I mean, like I, a Bill Clinton.
Stage,
like
the things he was saying on the stage a few weeks ago when he was getting booed at the California Democratic convention, I was like, I agree with that.
He's not a socialist.
I agree with that. And I agree with that. So,
yeah.
But I also think Chad wants me to wrap it up.
But he's got no chance.
Chad, we about done?
No chance with this group.
We are just about done.
We have 30 seconds left?
30.
So I thank you to Chad for keeping me on time today because I rambled a lot. I got distracted because we had a lot of great callers and a lot of great guests. Tony, thanks for everything.
You
as always.
Great job.
You guys got the DGS coming up next. We'll keep it right here, folks, for the Dave Glover Show. I'll be back on Friday. Annie's here tomorrow from New York City. Thanks to Frank, man in the phones, and all you all for listening. I'll be back Friday here at FM News Talk. 97.1.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.